Hello, Space Junkies, and welcome to What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. This is episode 139, and I'm your host, Scott Bultman, and joining me is my co-pilot here in the Drunken Gungan, Mr. Derek Marsh. Derek, how's it going?
Man, it's been a week of media, films, all sorts of stuff. The wife and I went out and saw Ghostbusters. I don't know, is this technically 3 Frozen Empire, or is it 4 Frozen Empire, or is it 5 Frozen Empire?
It might be 5, I don't know.
I don't know.
But yeah, it looked pretty good. Mita and I still have to get caught up on Afterlife, and then we can go watch that one.
And then we got X-Men 97 finally came out this week, and boy, is that coming off hot and running, excited. You know, we had a great episode this week, actually, in Bad Batch, which we'll talk about after the break. We had the Alien Romulus trailer drop, which really looks good. Tech harkens back to the original Alien. And then we got the Acolyte trailer. Oh, man.
Yes.
And I am now super hyped for June. I was, you know, okay with it. I was, you know, waiting to see, just like we talk about with all these movie announcements and all. It's like, give me a trailer. And they gave us a trailer, and boy, did it deliver. And I can't wait to talk about it.
Me too. And of course, we can't talk about all this major geekery, media stuff without our very own Dave Filoni, Mr. Miracle, the gooey chewy, man of a thousand nicknames, Nathan Miracle. Nathan, how's it going?
It is going pretty good. I haven't been watching all the same things y'all have, but I've been watching plenty of stuff with Survivor being back and The Amazing Race. Had some great episodes this week, but you know what? X-Men 97, excellent, top shelf. I know that we're doing Star Wars here, but make sure to listen in other parts of the Fandom Podcast Network to hear more about X-Men 97, because it's great.
Yes, and there totally will be other parts of the Fandom Podcast Network talking about it, because it ticks a bunch of boxes for all of our fandoms. But for now, let's jump over to the dark side so that we can discuss The Acolyte and the amazing trailer that came out this week for it. Guys, I've been pretty interested, like Derek just said, about Star Wars The Acolyte since it was announced quite a while ago, because it's really going into a different era, a different time frame in the Star Wars galaxy than we've seen much, and certainly than we've seen in live action Star Wars. And that is the time frame that is well before The Phantom Menace. It's not all the way back to The Old Republic that I really enjoy with Star Wars The Old Republic MMO and Knights of the Old Republic video games, but it is almost a century before The Phantom Menace, well on back into the High Republic era, which is a time frame that Disney has been emphasizing with alternative media like comic books and novels. And it's interesting to see what the struggle between the light side and the dark side will be like in a time where the light side and the Jedi Order specifically is really paramount, almost at the zenith of their, the apex of their power. And I am interested to see what it's going to be like when the bad guys are kind of the rebels. They're opposing the major powers, the major religious and political structures of the day. And this trailer absolutely emphasizes that idea. So I don't think we're not going to try to go shot by shot, because that would take too long, and we don't want to, you know, run afoul of any of Mr. Mickey's lawyers by accidentally playing a sound clip or a video. But we can definitely talk about our reactions to the overall themes of the trailer. So, Derek, what are your initial thoughts about the trailer? And then did you have a particular moment in it that was like your favorite moment?
So we got some big reveals with characters, right? We obviously got to see Trinity, right? Whatever her name is.
Yes, Carrie-Anne Moss.
Carrie-Anne Moss. I always forget. got to see Carrie-Anne Moss and her character, right? We get a little bit of a background vocal as we're, you know, seeing almost kind of like, again, hearkening to ancient Japanese or Asian culture type deal styles, as Scott's typing up and Googling-fooing something.
I'm Google-fooing what her character's name is, because, yes, it's Jedi Master Indara is Carrie-Anne Moss's
Indara,
character.
Okay. And then so we've got that going, and we get some really cool, you know, stealth assassin. We get to hear, like, you know, someone's killing Jedi, and why would they do that, right? Trying to understand it. Obviously, at this point, you know, as we've talked about, because it's kind of, as you mentioned, Scott, it's kind of like where the High Republic kind of ends, and then the Grand Republic, the one that we're more familiar with, is involved with, and kind of that transition. And this will be, you know, at some point, like you said, about 100 years, like 60 to 100 years before the Phantom Menace takes place. So really, you know, some stuff we'll probably see that's a bit familiar. I mean, there's not many characters that could potentially pop up other than Yoda. You know, we might see, you know, species and races. Obviously, we see a Wookiee, so I know that's going to be Nathan's high point. But just, you know, the hand-to-hand combat was really cool when they're kind of doing, like, the almost the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon type style of combat, and like the push, right? They're using the force push in the hand-to-hand combat. You kind of have the, you know, the Jedi Master Jong or whatever his name is, I think, who's kind of doing the initial with the younglings. And they're all kind
Jedi
of like...
Jedi Master Saul, S-O-L. Oh, and S-O-L, he is played by Lee Jong-jae.
Okay. Saul there, and then, you know, the younglings are talking about what they see, and, you know, you see two of them give them kind of like happy thoughts, the other one's like, I see fire, and you're like, well, you knew that was coming. So and
let's identify the bad one.
And so obviously, you know, there's going to be some really cool action scenes. We see a spacecraft crashing into, like, this, I mean, who knows, it could be Ilum, right? Someone's looking for a saber crystal, kyber crystal, and you know, all sorts of stuff. But just really super excited, really well put together, kind of puts together a mixture of a suspense thriller action in Star Wars universe. And it almost kind of feels like, you know, to your point, when you're talking about with the Rebels, it almost feels like it could be a la-esque Andor in some aspects, right? That type of suspense by thriller, but with Jedi. And again, I'm okay with Jedi. You know, again, I think, you know, a lot of us have appreciated the non-Jedi stuff because, you know, there's a big universe. You don't need the force of Jedi in every single, you know, thing. But this is where, you know, it could be done very well. And to your point too, Scott, it's seeing it from potentially the dark side view, right? And that's where it's interesting to see it, right? You know, we get some comics of some of the main characters we've had, you know, of Darth Vader, Dr. Aphra, Boba Fett, some of the robots, or bounty hunters and stuff like that. But to see a new perspective from a Sith that we don't know anything about could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think for me, overall reaction was very hyped to see this. I posted on Facebook when it came out. Is it June yet? You know, I'm even wanting to skip past ScottCon, my birthday celebration, just to get to more Star Wars. I'm just kidding, because my birthday celebration this year will involve more Star Wars by going to see The Phantom Menace in theaters. But also, I loved the scene where you had the other black lady who is obviously some sort of senator or diplomat with the very elaborate facial makeup on her forehead. And she's saying to you during the trailer, this isn't about right and wrong. It's about power. And all I could think was, well, anybody who starts the conversation with, oh, this isn't about who's right and who's wrong, they're very much wrong. Because that's what evil likes to do. It's like, we're going to relativize this because it's not really about who's right and who's wrong. This isn't about good and evil. Oh, yeah, you're totally trying to make it about not that, because you're the one that's evil. The people who are truly good, they don't really sit there and try to convince you that it's not about who's right and who's wrong, because they are assured that they are right. And so she's clearly going to be part of some kind of dark side. I won't necessarily say Sith, although I think it is going to be Sith. Some sort of dark side conspiracy that involves this, you know, former Jedi Padawan, May, I think is the character's name, who may or may not be one of the Padawans that we see in the beginning with Master Saul, who has sort of been swept up in the idea of the dark side, maybe even unaware that it's about the Sith themselves, or even unaware that it's about the dark side. You know, evil in the Star Wars galaxy is always enticing those people that used to be on the side of the light by making it seem like this is about some sort of personal choice or personal freedom. You know, Anakin was led astray because Palpatine was tugging on his heartstrings about his attachment to his family, both his mother, who had passed, and then, of course, Padme. And he was emphasizing the whole, oh, the Jedi are trying to restrict you. The Jedi are trying to hold you back, when I can help you understand how to really unleash the power of the Force and your full potential. I could easily see someone doing that to one of these Padawans once again. And to all of us old heads who have been watching Star Wars since day one, we'll be like, no, can't you see? But they're young, naive, stupid. And so they don't, they're not aware. That's right. They're not aware of the history of the galaxy, because although in this case, in this story, if Mei does fall to the dark side because of that kind of spiel, at least I won't be able to say, hasn't she paid any attention to the history they taught her at the Jedi Temple? Because this story is taking place before all that stuff, so she's got that going for her. But yeah, I really loved that scene of her talking to that lady, or at least the other diplomat, whose name absolutely escaping me, and I'm very upset with myself, but that's what I get for not doing my homework. Anyway, where she was talking about, you know, this isn't about who's right and who's wrong. This isn't about good versus evil. It's about, you know, who gets to express power and strength and so on and so forth. I'm like, this is clearly the quintessential Star Wars moment of the conspiracy grows, you know. Nathan, what were your initial thoughts, and or what did you like best about the trailer?
Well, you know, you guys know Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity. I know her as Jerry Hogarth from the Jessica Jones Marvel series. I'm sure y'all remember her there too, but I was never that big into The Matrix, so that's where I know her from. But watching this trailer, I was reminded of the year 2017. When, Scott, you and I were walking out of The Last Jedi, and I turned to you and I said, you know what really excites me most about this movie? For the first time in decades, I don't know what's going to happen next. Because much of The Last Jedi was set up by The Force Awakens, and it kind of followed that rhyming structure, the whole ring theory. And a lot of The Last Jedi had a lot of notes from Empire Strikes Back and from Attack of the Clones. And then with Snoke fulfilling the Emperor role, that pulled from Return of the Jedi, but I knew it was going to do that because it pulled from Empire Strikes Back in The Force Awakens. So a lot of stuff that happened in that movie, I expected. I wasn't surprised by all that much, but I had no clue what was going to come in episode 9. And that's kind of how I feel about The Acolyte. I really don't know what's going to happen in this series. I can't make predictions. It's going to be so different from so much of what we've seen in Star Wars. That's what excites me most. We've been saying on this podcast for a long time that the thing Star Wars really needs to do is get away from that one small time period from the start of The Phantom Menace up through the end of the Skywalker saga. We get so much that's in that really crunched in time frame that we want to see more outside that time frame. And this is giving that to us. So I'm very excited about that.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. The broadening of the galaxy is really needed, and it's going to be great. Okay, so even more intrigued now by this character that said this isn't about good or bad, I decided to head over to StarWars.com and check the data bank. There's plenty of information about the Acolyte and its characters already, so good job to the mothership website, StarWars.com. But this character's name is Mother Aniseya, A-N-I-S-E-Y-A, and the description of her character is, Mother Aniseya is the leader of a coven of witches who value their independence and the preservation of their beliefs and powers. So we have some kind of Force witches, although the databank didn't actually say Force witch, but in Star Wars parlance so far, that means Force witch, either Witches of Dathomir or back on Endor for, you know, Battle for Endor with the Force witch there in battling our friend Eric Walker and his family. So, yeah, if she is one of the Night Sisters, or even adjacent to the Night Sisters, it very much makes sense for her to be all, this isn't about good or bad. Like, sure, sure. But that's fascinating that means we're going to have such differing views of the Force or if you will, differing styles of religion in the Star Wars galaxy at this moment in time in the story of the Acolyte. So it could very well be that Mei is not being led astray by Sith, but being led astray by the witches, and she's somehow fighting to protect the right of Mother Anaseya and her coven to believe what they want to believe about the Force. And the Jedi might be like, no, we know better than you. We're going to put the kibosh on this. And maybe they do, and maybe they don't. If we have dark side witches, maybe we have light side witches on the Force. I mean, who are we to say, right? The Jedi, of course, always are going to be victim of their own hubris when it comes to any time frame where they have a temple and religion and government are so intertwined. Always a bad idea here on Earth. Always a bad idea out there in the galaxy far, far away. And so this, I think, is a classic example of that. That part of the trailer still remains my favorite, and even more so now that I know that that is basically a witch saying that.
I'm also going to be tempted to see... I have a crazy theory, whether it's correct or not. But if you... look at Amandla Stenberg, who's playing Mei, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you look at her, the hand-to-hand combat, her points of when she's got the like knives and stuff that she's using, the little size or whatever you want to look at, right? And then if you look at the end when the flying twirling red lightsaber is caught, it does not look like her hand.
It doesn't. Right. It could very well be someone else is catching lightsaber.
Honestly, looks like, I mean, you could see it's obviously someone of darker skin tone, but it mm-hmm. looks like, because the hand looks very bigger to way the lightsaber lands, so it looks like it's almost a man's hand. Now, I apologize if it ends up being a female that catches it, but the hand, guys, compared to it, looks very large. So
you have
almost...
to admit, he's rather mannish.
She's rather mannish. She's got man hands. All
right. But anyways, she could have very big hands, and the fingers look a lot wider than the way her hands look like. Because I'm actually looking at her IMDb page, and her fingers are definitely a lot more feminine looking. Right, they're a little bit skinnier, like, you know, because again, she's not like a huge tall person. She's pretty petite, actually. I think she looks about 5'4", 5'5". I haven't typed in what her height is in yet. So, So it makes me wonder. Okay, so whose hand could that be that grabbed the red lightsaber? So,
yeah. So Nathan, Master Kelnaka is the Wookiee Jedi, and according to the data bank here, he is a loner who leads a very solitary life, and I love that he's a Wookiee with a top knot, because he's got part of his
head shaved. He's got a man bun.
And, yes, right, yeah. So that's pretty
it's
cool.
It's a Wookiee bun, are you, thank you very much.
Okay, it's not man bun, he's not a man. Are you excited to see a full-fledged Wookiee Jedi? I mean, I know we had Gunji, but he was basically a Padawan. I don't think he ever actually got to finish the trials and become a Jedi Knight.
That is correct. In one way, I'm excited. In another way, I'm not. The way that I'm not quite as excited is this series is set not that far before the prequels. Wookiees have a very long lifespan, and we don't see him anywhere in Episode 1 or in the Clone Wars. So I fear for our Wookiee friend.
Yeah. Kelnaka might not survive the series.
There might be a lot of these guys that don't survive. Let's be honest.
I suspect a lot of them won't survive, because when we get to Episode 1, the Jedi think that the Sith have been extinct for a long time. So this may be an unsolved mystery. It totally wasn't the Sith. We just don't know why they all died with lightsaber wounds.
Well, I mean, and like I said, maybe it isn't the Sith. Maybe this is a Witches of Dathomir kind of thing. It's a Night Sister conspiracy. And so Yoda and especially Mace Windu would be all, well, technically that wasn't a Sith, so we're not going to write that down.
Well, Mace Windu wouldn't be alive technically yet, so...
That's true. Yoda should be, though.
Oh, yeah. Yoda definitely be alive. So, like I said, he's about the only one we could get a cameo. Again, you know, whether we'll see a Darth Plagueis.
Well, he's the only one we're sure of that we could get a cameo. We do see a member of Plo Koon's species as a Jedi, and we don't know how long-lived his species is. So it's theoretically possible that that even is a younger Plo Koon. How much is Dave Filoni involved in this is the real
Very
question.
Very little, but I'm sure he's overseeing the story, right?
Can he pull a string and be like, so Plo Koon is totally from a species that lives for hundreds of years.
Or his father.
Could be that, yes. We do find out in the Republic books that Jedi, they can't have attachments, but they can have relationships that can lead to children, if you understand my meaning.
And we do. It's interesting to note also that we've got a few other Jedi Masters that are named in this article here on StarWars.com. Of course, we had talked about Jedi Master Saul and Jedi Master Indara, but there's also Jedi Master Vernestra Ruo, or Ro, whom I think is a character in the High Republic. Ah, yes, definitely. This is the first time this character will be seen in live action, of course. And she looks like she is a Mirrolin, based on my experience with Star Wars The Old Republic MMO. Fans of the High Republic, I apologize if I got her race wrong. But her databank file at StarWars.com has been updated to include this info. With a purple-bladed lightsaber that can change into a light whip, young Ruo led with unwavering faith in the Force and devotion to the Jedi Order. But in the year after the fall of Starlight Beacon, which is, of course, the space station that gets destroyed in the High Republic opening moments of story, while mourning those lost in the destruction, including her own Padawan, Vernestra pulled back from the Order and shifted her focus to heal herself. So then she would be coming out of that, I think, to help with these investigations as to who is killing Jedi and how are they doing it. I think that's a big thing that we're going to have, is that other Jedi, like when Master Indara and Master Saul begin their investigation, I'm going to theorize, sorry Nathan, that this is about the death of Kelnaka himself. So when they go to investigate, how did someone kill not just a Wookiee, but a Wookiee Jedi, and then just how did a Jedi get killed? I think that we've reached the point in the galaxy where one of the Jedi being defeated by anything is such a rarity that the first thing they're going to have to figure out is, how did they die? What was the manner of their death? Because this, like, to them, it makes no sense that this would even be possible, much less the beginning of a pattern of deaths of Jedi.
Well, you make a good point in that in episode one, Anakin looks at Qui-Gon Jinn and asks about his laser sword and says, well, nobody could kill a Jedi and take their laser sword.
That's right.
Of course, yeah. Qui-Gon Jinn responds with, I wish that were true. So maybe they have this whole kind of mythology of, nobody can kill a Jedi, but
the heir like of Qui-Gon invincibility.
Jinn, right. Somebody like Qui-Gon Jinn is wise enough to realize, that's not true. But I'm going to disagree with you about killing the Wookiee Jedi Master as kind of the impetus for the plot. That does make sense from what you said with the description saying that he's a loner, but there is actually an image on the stills gallery on StarWars.com where he's standing around with six other Jedi.
Oh, hoisted on my own petard.
They use him because he's a tracker. He's like the Quinlan Voss of their era.
So, that would be really cool.
I could dig it.
So they need him to track the assassin. So
I'm down for that. Oh, I see the picture you're talking about, Nathan. Oh, look, there's a guy, several people in the background of that picture where Kelnaka is there with Master Indara and several other Jedi, and there are people surrounding them with bows as weapons. And we know, bows as in projectile launchers, not bow staffs, we know that some of the Witches of Dathomir are all about bows, energy bows, but also regular bows as their weapon of choice.
Yeah, I'm going to say I miscounted because when I said six Jedi, I was counting those people with bows. Those aren't Jedi, are they?
Three. I don't other think they Jedi are. They look. Yeah, they look like they have Kilnaka and Mandara and their friends surrounded. They look like witches, witches of Dathomir, yeah. even with their projectile weapons mm-hmm. and their dark cloaks.
Well, well and a couple of images later, we see the leader of the witches, and that appears to be the same area, like probably later in the same scene.
Yeah, Mother Anasea here seems to be like standing amidst a group of faithful followers who are all women, I would point out, at least as far as I can tell. So again, we got a very serious Witches of Dathomir, Night Sisters vibe going here. So perhaps...
Well, again, if they think the Sith are dead, right, then they're the ones that are going to be accused, right, of dark yeah. magic. So, again, right. that's where the early episodes will lead you to is, well, we need to go, you know, to your point, we need to go check on the witches because they're the only ones that could, you know, be casting this bad juju. And, you know, because yes. the Sith haven't been around for a millennium, right, or some... hocus pocus thing that the Jedi believe right. self-righteousness, right? So since the days of Olvan, right? So and again, you know, that's the whole point of, you know, the way the trailer goes at the end is that, you know, what is that, right? Oh, it's a red lightsaber, it's a Sith, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the impression you're supposed to get. So I would definitely think that's what's gonna fall into the way we're kind of piecing everything together. So
yeah. Well, whatever it turns out to be, you guys can rest assured that we're going to discuss it ad nauseum here on the podcast. In fact, my youngest son, Joseph, has already texted me to say, Dad, when you start talking about the Acolyte, I want to be on the podcast. And I'm like, you're asking me to be on the show instead of me begging you?
Oh, his heart has melted.
I'm just going to ascend now, become one with the Force. I can't get happier. Anyway, so yes, hopefully Joseph will
June
follow 4th, through on
it's
that.
It's a Tuesday. It's a Tuesday, so that means it's going to be hopefully a 9 p.m. Eastern premiere, and the first two episodes are going to drop. So,
excellent, excellent. Do we know how many episodes in total we're getting? Eight?
That's what they show so far, it looks like, because I was double-checking. Dave Filoni does not have his name attached to this whatsoever, so sorry, Nathan.
No. This is great because that it goes back to my whole I don't know what's going to happen. The reason Dave I Filoni. Don't know what's going to happen. Exactly. I'm reaching out and getting nothing. It's
but we've
wonderful.
Got it shows four directors. We have Hanel M. Culpepper. Alex Garcia Lopez, Leslie Headland, and Koganda, or Kogonada. I have no idea who this person is. I got to click on it. Oh, it's the, what did he do? No, I thought he did something else. He looked familiar for a second there, but no, it looks like a lot of up and coming people that like maybe the past, within the past 10 years, have done a lot of shorts and drama television or, you know, sci-fi dramas or other thrillers stuff. So, again, that's fine because that's the emphasis that we're going for with the series. So that would be the people you want to, I guess, bring in as directors, right? Would be folks that are around that type of filming. So totally. Awesome.
Cool. All right. Yep. I'm stoked, and we can't wait to share with you guys more discussion of Star Wars The Acolyte. But there's even more discussion about fandom stuff here on the FPN. So let's take a short break so Kevin can tell us all about the other shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right. Thanks very much, Kevin. We're excited if you guys want to go check out those other shows. But speaking of checking out shows, let's dive into our analysis of Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 8, where we get to see the return of one of my favorite modern era Star Wars characters. But I won't start things off with question one. I will let Derek kick us off. Derek, what was your favorite part about this episode?
I really enjoyed, again, more of the character development, specifically between Omega and Crosshairs. I really liked the portion of the episode where they actually didn't have Omega come with them for once, right? Because we've always joked around that it's like, well, why do we want to keep bringing Omega with us every time? I know she wants to contribute. She's quote unquote part of the team, but if again, she's the one that they're hunting, why would you bring her into danger, right? They don't know about Padu and all that stuff. So, you know, keep her secret, keep her safe, keep her hidden, right? But then she spends some time with Crosshairs, because Hunter was, you know, trying to basically say, you know, have him get his hand checked out. He finds out, you know, that they get it medically scanned. The robot couldn't find any issues. He says that it's not, you know, physical at this point. And then so she's helping him doing the trick she learned from the Wookiees and Gunji, right, with the meditation and the breathing exercises. But just the interaction and the again, the conversations that I felt that they were having was good. I appreciate that dialogue, the way it was written. So really, like I said, kind of like that. I mean, it was, you know, a typical 24 minute episode, so you know there wasn't a whole lot of stuff. I mean, there was a little bit of action. The guys are always getting in trouble like usual, but I like that portion of this episode because again I like where they're going with Crosshairs and really trying to deep dive that character.
Yeah, I agree. I loved seeing the character interaction between Crosshair and Omega. But for me, my favorite part of this episode, in case it wasn't obvious from my intro section there, was the return of Fennec Shand. I think she's such a cool character, and I love having her be an addition to Star Wars here in the Disney era, and even during these stories that are set in, you know, a different time frame. It's really cool to see her prior to her death, if you will, in Star Wars The Mandalorian, or Star Wars The Book of Boba Fett, rather, or both. And the way that she acts differently between then and now-ish, when she's been healed, rebuilt, I don't know however you want to call it, but brought back from the dead by Boba Fett himself. That was such a really cool way for her character to sort of go through that change. So this Fennec Shand here in The Bad Batch is very much no-nonsense, cold, calculating, all about the business perspective. For the most part, she had a little bit of a soft spot for the things happening with Omega. But she is at that moment in time when she's dealing with Hunter and Wrecker in this episode of The Bad Batch, where she's all about getting the money for capturing this praying mantis type dude, which is really cool to see more insectoid style aliens that aren't Geonosians as well. So I liked that about this episode too. Finnick is here, and she is just as much of a badass as she ever will be, and still great with her sniper rifle, and cunning and calculating enough to make sure that on this mission, Hunter and Wrecker take all the risks, and she just sort of hangs out in the boat for the most part. So you can't fault her for that. Nathan, what did you like best about this episode?
All right, well, longtime listeners will know that we ask 5 questions, and one of those questions is, what connections did you draw to the larger Star Wars galaxy? So my response to question number 1 is going to serve also as my response to question number 3, because...
Hey, wait a minute, that's cheating! Come on, what? Anyway.
Well, I'm going to talk for a little bit on this. The insectoid guy that you mentioned, his name is Sylar Saris, and he's not just an insectoid guy. He is a... Yamri, which is a specific species of insectoid guys, first seen in 1977. This species was seen in the cantina.
He was Kittrick, or one of those monsters, as as Mark Hamill loves to call them. Yeah, it's the cantina. You get to see all the monsters. Anyway.
Yes, this one was Kittrick. Keed Kak, at least that's what the Star Wars CCG from Decipher named this particular character. They also said that this character was the daughter of Kal Falnal Kandros, which is actually a member of an entirely different species. So they kind of
adopted daughter.
Yeah.
That's the card. Derek came prepared. Yeah.
You did come prepared. Yes.
Now tell me that you didn't hunt that up before we started recording, and you just happened to have Kittrick Keedrek sitting on your desk at all times.
I don't have her sitting here at all times. I keep buying collections and sorting through things and selling stuff, so I just happen to have a black border set I'm putting together from Premiere, and it's like you mentioned, she has a cameo, right? And a power 8, you know, back then, yes, that was more than Darth Vader had.
That was
so.
Yeah.
If she was ever at the same site as Kal Falnal Kandros, she was just lost immediately.
AKA legs.
Yeah, which
AKA
is one reason.
AKA KFC, because the joke was about chicken legs.
Yep, that's the one. That's one reason that I always had that card in my deck.
Well, plus she's a 0/5. So she's free, and she's a 5/4.
She's a miniature Hujix. So
So I thought it was great to see them pull in a species that we have only seen one other time outside of A New Hope, and that other time was in the Phineas and Ferb Star Wars special.
This gets even better.
Who does the voice those for? Who, right? Who? What's the linkage between Phineas and Ferb?
That would be our very own clone master, aka Perry the Platypus. That's the guy. Yes, also played Appa.
It's Mr. D. Bradley Baker himself.
It is
good
Mr.
times.
D. Bradley Baker. So he is the connection amongst all those wonderful shows. It was interesting to see a species that had only appeared in A New Hope and then also appeared on Tatooine as part of the cantina scene with the Phineas and Ferb Star Wars special. Not technically canon, but nothing actually contradicts the movie. They were very careful about that.
Now you make me want to go look up the Family Guy version when they did that, if they made a cameo of the aliens in the cantina now, just to say, you know what, there's another one too, Nathan.
The best of my knowledge, not this specific one. They did add the ability to spit acid. That is not something that we've seen, but it's also not something that we've verified that the versions that we've seen can't do. They just haven't had...
Was it acid or was it just goop? Because I would assume that would have eaten through Wrecker's helmet.
It was It was acid, but I only know this because I watched the episode with the descriptive audio turned on because I like to do, you know, strange little things to try to pick up little tidbits. Also, there was an episode of Star Wars Rebel Force Radio where Jimmy Mack talked about how he likes to watch it with the descriptive audio because it gets, you know, some interesting moments. And he said he had a Ted Knight flashback because during last week's episode, Extraction, where the Citadel gets attacked, you hear the narrator of the descriptive audio go, "Meanwhile, at the monastery," and I'm like, yes, it's Super Friends, here we go. Meanwhile, back on Tatooine. Anyway, so yeah, that's absolutely what I was hoping to get. I didn't get a meanwhile in this episode with Fennec Shand, but I did get to hear the descriptive audio guy say, "The alien spits acid on Wrecker's helmet, distracting him."
It must have just been either it must have been a mild acid or the clone armor must have.
Yeah, it was no xenomorph acid.
Yeah,
he clearly wiped it off
your face. Yeah,
it was not acid for blood. No, not at all. No.
Now, Sylar Saris is also known as the Slayer of Ordo Aris, and Ordo Aris is an actual location in the Star Wars galaxy, but it is not one that you see in the movies. It is one that you see in a few different... Well, you see it in Fallen Order, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. It's mentioned in a few other places. So it's not something I was terribly familiar with, but it was neat to hear a call out to a location that does actually exist and existed prior to this episode. That was a lot of connections to a lot of different parts of the Star Wars galaxy, but it was also my favorite part because I recognized the species immediately as soon as we saw Sylar. I'm like, oh my gosh, that is the Cantina alien insect.
Nice.
Looked it up afterwards. I'm like, yes, yeah, that was intentional. This was not, we just made another insectoid that happened to look a lot like it. Same species.
Outstanding. Yeah, good answer, Nathan. I take it all back with my complaints about you trying to cheat and answer two questions at the same time. What are you going to do? All right, question number two. What did you like the least about this episode? And I'm going to go first here so that I can, you know, grouse a bit as an old man. So prepare yourselves to listen to me rant and maybe yell at clouds. But no, it's just a real quick complaint that I've had too many times about the Bad Batch. This episode was so dark. When they were in the swamp, I had so much trouble seeing what the heck was going on that I may have turned on the descriptive audio just to find out, wait, are they still alive? Is that Wrecker or Hunter? I'm getting too old for this low light nonsense. Please switch back the camera to Fennec Shand's helmet so that I can see through her night vision scope, which they did a couple of times, mercifully giving me a clue as to what the heck was going on. Now, part of me wants to be all, well, they're just going for the atmosphere. It was this creepy, dark, shadowy swamp, and, you know, Ted Knight is there even in spirit. Meanwhile, at the Hall of Doom. And so, you know, that kind of thing happening. But then the cynic in me wants to be all, you know, the animation's a lot less expensive and takes a lot less time if you don't have to fill in all this detail and you're just like, shadows. Lots and lots of shadows. I appreciate taking us to Space Florida, and that was really cool to see, and they had to fight against, you know, sci-fi space gators. Yeah, but I couldn't tell what was happening. I wanted them to go back underwater to do the disarming of the mines thing just so I could know for sure what was going on, because somehow the view underwater was more clear than the view above water. Anyway, maybe it's just my old man eyes, and Mita looked at me while we were watching this Wednesday afternoon and said, okay, from now on, we got to wait and watch the Bad Batch at nighttime so we can really turn up the brightness on the TV. You know, I don't know. Maybe you guys just think I'm old. I am the oldest guy in the ship tonight, so perhaps that you didn't feel this way, but yeah, that's my complaint. Way too dark, Dave. Way too dark. Nathan, what did you dislike about this episode?
Stop me if you've heard this one before, but when I was watching this episode, I had a really hard time telling what was going on because it was...
What the heck is going on?
Yeah, that legitimately was my biggest complaint. I had to watch it twice on different settings And the weird part is you talk about how, you know, it saves on the animation if you don't have to animate everything because it's all in shadows. Once I turned the brightness up, it's not that they didn't animate everything. They did. Mm. It's just sometimes, depending on how you have your settings, it comes through as so, so dark. The first time I practically could not see anything. Then the second time it was a little bit better, just watching it on a different screen with different settings. So that was probably my biggest complaint. So that we don't just repeat the same complaint, my secondary complaint is the animation on the water. Water is a very, very difficult thing to animate. I've heard a lot about this with Moana. They introduced completely new ways of animating water just because it is so difficult to animate water. And you can tell that they did not apply those ways to the water in this.
They didn't have a Moana budget.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a budget.
Fennec Shand is no Disney princess. Sorry.
I'm afraid not.
That's true.
Yeah, but when they like went looking in the water and you can see the water from above, it's so not water. It didn't look anything like water. Which isn't a story complaint. That is very much a CGI and probably, as Derek said, stems from how much budget they had. They just couldn't make it look all that good.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Derek, are you going to complain about light levels or you got something else?
Well, actually, I'll be honest, and you guys know I'm with you on that light level stuff. Actually, I didn't find this one as bad as some of the others. Like, especially the ones when they're doing those in like the caves and the caverns ones that we've had, especially last season. There was some really bad ones. This one I didn't find as bad, but I can agree with you that yes, it is definitely shoddy of them to just keep putting in cheap animation stills with darkness. So, this one again always gets me. Because apparently not only do the Bad Batch never do their homework, neither does Fennec Shand. Because like you would think that they would go in with this, and yet Yamris are completely immune to it. Like okay, yeah, like I'm like okay, first time maybe it was not quite a direct hit, but the second, the third, the fourth, I'm like okay.
It's worse than when the gangsters shoot at Superman and like they fire, he's fine. They empty the, then of course instead of stopping, they empty the clip and then throw the gun at him. Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there like, okay, like I guess like I know that they I guess apparently want him alive, which I get that for the bounty. But at the same time I'm sitting there laughing. I'm just like, did they not do their homework? Is it just because as you said, the insectoids, they have this like super hard shell and they just have this ability, or is there like something about like mantis that I just don't know, like in real life, are mantis like immune to like electricity or something, Can you not electroshock a mantis, right? I don't know.
I figured it was probably something to do with it being an insectoid, and they set for stun probably does something to a particular organ in a humanoid body that an insectoid might not have.
So I just assume because they wanted him alive. So
Well, that's why they did the set for stun thing, but the reason it didn't work may be, yes, this shorts out your nervous system that you don't have because
that he doesn't very have. Well. Right, yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or like I said, the fact that he's got like a thick armor plated skin to your point where the stun would absorb it. Right. And it would take him up and they would knock him out right here. He's obviously somewhat resistant, but I'm like, but you think they would have like brought like a bigger stun gun or something with them, right? Like a concussion gun, something. Yeah. Or like some or some like boomerang, things, sometimes
some Deoxys. Something. I mean, we're going to joke about Raid, but spray him with some Deoxys or something,
Something. Right. Smoke bomb would have probably been more appropriate. So.
Their mosquito fogger.
But I did appreciate, that obviously they made him out to be some type of bad guy because like nobody's gotten to him at this point, right? But I just thought it was funny. It's like, okay, like Fennec didn't even know to like, like you're gonna have to shoot him. Like she could have said, like you're gonna have to shoot him like 10 times with the stun gun. Like set your gun to rapid stun or something.
Anyway. Set your gun to stun 2.
Yeah. Yep. Anyways. Or set it to 11, right? If you're on Spinal Tap.
Yes, stun 11. Yes.
The problem is that set for stun card that you showed is a dark side card. And this is also a dark side character, so you can't play Set for Stun against him.
Ah, clearly that is the problem. Clearly.
Clearly. I was going to call that out. I was thinking of that, Nathan, so don't worry. I was thinking of that. I'm like, well,
I love maybe. That. I love that you had not only Kitchik's card nearby, well, but also Set for Stun. I know, you're just like, yeah, but...
I was like, I got all the cards.
Good times. All right, question number three. What connections did you draw to
Nathan?
The...
So.
Yes, Nathan's already answered. Yeah, yeah. So my connection, of course, is Fennec Shand. So I was happy to see her again. I talked a little bit about her already in question one, but a really cool bounty hunter. And I hope, and this may exist already because I haven't looked at the Players Committee for a while, but I hope that there is a Star Wars CCG Players Committee card of Fennec Shand someday soon, if not already.
There is.
Yeah, there is. Cool. Awesome. I'm excited because she's such a cool character. And then Nathan just gave us that excellent combination there with the insectoid alien. And then also AZ-1 was back. So it was cool to see the medical droid and him doing the whole, well, there's nothing wrong with your hand because that is a Star Wars connection. Medical droid checking out your hand, whether you're Luke Skywalker, Anakin Skywalker, or apparently Crosshair, and so on and so forth.
And it's right hand.
And it's the same. Yep, the right hand. Yep. So that's pretty cool. Derek, what connections did you draw?
So not too many. I mean, obviously Nathan had the biggest one that we all linked to. Obviously he had a lot more research into it. Though I did come prepared with visuals. So the one I did make is it always makes me laugh. Is so they have these rafts and the rafts are floating in water, but when they're actually moving, they're floating above the water. Right. And yeah, so when you think about this, it's like, well, that's Jabba's sail barge, right? Like he's got a giant sail barge. It floats above the sand, right? We never really see like if it actually can like tail some of it into the sand at some point or like when it lands and stuff like that. Because obviously the raft was able to go through water when they cut the engines and all that stuff. So it was still able to at least float, but when it was in motion. So, but that was the one connection I had is that, oh, it's just another propelled rafter float that, you know, goes above the surface that it's actually meant to go over. I'm like, okay, whatever. I guess it's just
a mini, float. Yeah, why do we bother to make the boats look like boats that have hulls and like, you know, seaworthiness if they're never actually going to touch the water? So that's why I enjoyed in The Phantom Menace the submarine that Jar Jar helps Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan get does actually go in the water. It doesn't just, you know, hover. And then also in that episode of The Mandalorian a little while ago where he met up with Bo-Katan and Cusker Reeves and Axe Woves the first time, that boat was actually touching the water as well. So this was one of the few times that we see aquatic vessels that really do the sailing thing instead of the hover thing.
Well, and we did get it. No, you're right. Yep. So that's definitely... Yeah, to your point.
Was that a pod racer engine attached
could've
to the
been.
Back of it? Because
that's been.
What it looked like to me.
Mm-hmm. Vaguely. It vaguely resembled that. Maybe it's that type of engine was built by Coensar or Incom or somebody like that for a variety of uses, and kind of like the old hit-and-miss diesel engine that used to be toted around the farm at the turn of the 20th century. You could use it to do all kinds of things. You just had to hook it up in different configurations. So, like, you could use it to run a corn husker. You could use it to run a cotton gin. You could use it to run your tractor to plow. You could use it to run the ice cream churn, which is where you still see it in use sometimes today at, like, FFA gatherings or state fairs. And it's an old hit-and-miss diesel engine. Pop, 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 pop. And it's got that giant winch, and you attach a belt to it, and it can drive all sorts of things. So maybe that pod racer engine isn't really made for pod racing. We just all think of it as that because that's the first thing we saw it do. But people use it for lots of things, like powering their airboat, pod racing, maybe an actual land speeder, or, of course, the most popular use for a pod racing engine, roasting Ronto wraps.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Again, not really designed for that, and yet also not really designed not to do it. So Incom or Coensar, whoever makes that, Sinar Fleets, I don't know, whoever made that engine, it's like the most popular engine in the galaxy because you can do a million and one things with it. Get yours today
at
Watto's Junkyard. That's right. Anyway, okay, question number four. So, Derek, this is your question, so take it away.
Yeah, so we've touched a little bit about on it, but obviously at this point we have confirmed that Crosshair's handshaking is a mental issue. So, you know, what is it do you guys think is blocking him from, you know, being able to be, stable hand? Do you think it's because of the trade, or do you think it's because of something else?
I think he's lost his sense of purpose. Like when he was Mr. Crackshot shooting around the corner with his little mirror discs and all that stuff at the beginning of this show, he was very much convinced that not only was he on the side of right, but that he was the best there is at what he does. No quarter asked, none given. Anyway, and so he was supremely convinced of his superiority, but now he's been through so much and become so disillusioned that he's not the best around anymore because he doesn't believe in his ability to be the best around. Or maybe even he still thinks he has the ability, but he doesn't have the justification for killing things as much as he used to. He used to be killing in the name of, and now he's, why am I killing? And so his subconscious won't let him follow through with ultimate lethal force because he's not convinced that that blaster bolt does need to go where he's pointing it. You know, he used to be inhale, kill, exhale, inhale, kill, exhale, and now he's inhale, question. Nathan, what do you think?
Well, I think it's kind of similar to that, but I think it's a more direct thing from the Empire. I think they tried to program him to be one of those assassin shadow troopers that we saw in the previous episodes. And he's acting like, oh, yeah, I just totally was not up for that. So, no, absolutely not. But the programming is trying to take hold, and he is actively fighting against it. As long as he's actively fighting against it, he can't control himself quite as well, and that's what's leading to the hand tremors. I think at some point he will somehow give into that programming, but not necessarily in the way that the Empire wants. This might end up being a little bit like in the Heir to the Empire trilogy, because we love connecting Bad Batch to Heir to the Empire.
We love connecting everything to Heir to the Empire.
Yeah, but especially right now with the whole Mount Tantus thing.
Yeah, they talk about Mount Tantus every episode. How can you not?
Exactly. Mara Jade clears out the Emperor's programming by killing Luke, the clone of Luke. And, you know, that kind of sets her free from the you must kill Luke Skywalker. I think that he may end up doing something similar where he does assassinate somebody, but maybe it's Hemlock himself. And you know, through that, he kind of releases the programming, and that's how he gains his control back.
Fascinating. Okay, all right. Derek, what's your answer to your own question there, sir?
I mean, like I said, I totally agree with the way you guys are thinking, right? Again, it could be the PTSD type deal, you know, where he's, you know, unsure of himself, to your point, right? Doesn't have a truer meaning. Could be what Nathan suggested, right? I think it's where he's actually a clone, you know, shadow agent, and he's fighting himself not to kill them at this point because he's trying to get them to a point where he can get them, you know, and then betray them. So, but again, I don't think they'll go that dark. It'll probably be something closer to what Nathan's suggesting. I think it is something to do with the programming. More versus than just kind of a PTSD or that. But again, it could be very well, like I said, as we're finding more and more, again, they're giving us tidbits of it. Hopefully by the end of these next six episodes, we'll actually get the conclusion of what it is. Not just have something short, rubbed and it's like, oh, it's fine and dandy and he just becomes a farmer. We'll actually get, some conclusion.
Yeah. I kind of like the idea of a sleeper personality. I know we talked about this a little bit on the last episode of our podcast, that Crosshair might have been turned into one of these Clone X guys. He just doesn't know it yet, and whatever key command is going to be issued to awaken him. If that happens, I hope that before it happens, though, we get a scene sort of like in Babylon 5, in the first season when Ivanova and Talia Winter, who is a Psi-Corps operative, are talking to each other and Talia says, "I don't feel like a victim." And Ivanova says, "I know." And that makes it even worse. And so I think that if we get that, Crosshair will very much be all, "I'm finally free of the Empire's control and I'm really happy and I made peace with myself and now I can take the kill shot again and everything's conky-dory with my brain." And then, boom, "You must now betray your friends. I must kill Hunter," you know. And I mean, hey, and maybe we'll get our homage to Heir to the Empire will be complete by some sort of, technically he killed Hunter, but then Hunter got better or whatever,
or he, know, he, you know, he's a Captain Clark Turrell and he turns the pistol on himself.
So. Oh gosh, I hope we don't go that dark.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that he's to fight the system, right? Fight the controlling unit.
That's true.
He can't
kill his brother. Yeah.
So, okay, you brought up Star Trek. You brought up Babylon 5. I'm going to have to bring up a show that I enjoy,
okay.
Young Justice. At the end of season one, it's revealed that Cadmus has been cloning heroes and inserting key phrases, much like what you were just talking about. And the one for Superboy was Red Sun. And in the finale, or close to the finale, Superboy goes to meet Lex Luthor, and Luthor, you know, does this, says Red Sun, and Superboy freezes. But it turns out Miss Martian has actually cleared that particular command from his mind. So it's all a big
ruse.
It's a big ruse. He's pretending to be under the mental domination of Lex Luthor, but really he's not. So could be a situation like that where they figure out, the key phrase that they have to say is yada, yada, yada. And they remove it from his
mouth. Just yada, yada over the best part.
And then Hemlock is all yada, yada, yada. And then Crosshairs pretends to betray Tracker, as Finnick calls him, and actually doesn't.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. Yeah, I could see that happening. But the rest of the team doesn't know that Crosshair can fake it, and so he fakes everybody out, and then at the last second turns and shoots Hemlock, you know.
Well, if they do it like Young Justice, they don't show you clearing, or they don't show them clearing the mental command. So we didn't know that they had cleared that out. So even the audience is like, "Oh no, Superboy is gonna beat up his friends," and then he
curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. All right, question number 5, and I did this one this week, so I'll take it away. Who did Finnick contact at the end of the episode? Is she just trying to get the information that she promised to Hunter and Wrecker, or did she betray Hunter and Wrecker? Nathan, what do you think? Is Finnick on the up and up, or she calls somebody nefarious?
She's nefarious. She's a bounty hunter. She even says that, you know, heroes, villains, their money is just as good. I think she contacted Hemlock.
Interesting. Okay. I was going to say, I think she contacted somebody from the Empire. I don't know if it's specifically Hemlock, because I'm not sure that Finnick knows enough secretive Empire stuff that she knows how to contact Dr. Hemlock directly, because he seems to be pretty deep into the super secret spy world stuff. But maybe she does. I mean, you know, she's definitely been sent to capture Omega, but I think there's some sort of Imperial handler, like, between her and Hemlock, and that's who she was calling. I definitely don't think she was just calling some other shadow market, black market, shadow world operative to get some M count information for Hunter and Wrecker. She was contacting somebody from the Empire, in my opinion. Derek, what do you think?
Either she was contacting Nala Se again, like we had before, or it's Asajj Ventress. So.
Oh, yeah, see, that's a good way for them to introduce Asajj. Although I still am kind of holding out hope that the thing that's in the laser gate vault at Mount Tantus is a cloned Asajj Ventress. Or, as Nathan theorized last episode of our podcast, Asajj with just one J, because she's the first Asajj Ventress, and they've just been making copies of her ever since. That would be pretty good. Yeah, it's not Asajj, it's Asajj, the original, the definitive article, you might say. So yeah, I think that'll be fun either way. But I think we'll find out in episode 9 whether or not Finnick contacted the Empire or some other Shadow operative or underworld.
I hope contact. So. They've got 6 episodes left, so.
I know. Yeah, we got to get this.
We got to wrap this up here, man.
Well, so. What I don't want is for us to get to the final episode or the final couple episodes and us be sitting here going, they got a lot of threads to wrap up. Star Wars has done that in several series recently, and I don't like it.
Yeah. It's real hit or miss as to whether they pull it off.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, speaking of wrapping things up, let's go ahead and start wrapping up this episode of the podcast. We're getting a little long in the tooth here, but we can't leave without doing Derek's favorite part of the show, and that is, what Star Wars t-shirt are we wearing this week? Derek, what do you got?
A classic one I've worn before, the Death Star schematics.
Oh, yes, the Death Star cutaway with all the superstructure exposed and the diagramming of what goes where and which of these particular pieces were made by Kino Loy and Cassian Andor as they were building the Lego Death Star.
They don't list Cassian Andor on here, but I'm sure he's got a piece right here. So.
Yeah, totally. It's one of those weird Y-shaped things. They had to make a million of them. Yeah, good times. I am wearing, as in a deference to bounty hunting, because we had Finnick Shan, bounty hunter extraordinaire, Mandalorian bounty hunter seal, an excellent black and white seal on a white t-shirt that is all about the big mythosaur's skull. I love the whole Mandalorian culture and the fact that we have expanded it so much thanks to Star Wars, The Mandalorian. Nathan, what do you got?
All right, well, I am wearing a Dave Filoni-inspired t-shirt with Ahsoka riding the Loth Wolf. Now, last week I was wearing the Wolfpack shirt because, you know, we got Wolf. And I need your help to decide, because on April 6th, we are going to the South Carolina Comic-Con, and I've heard rumors that the 501st is doing something there that a Dave Filoni cosplay would fit in great with. So I need to decide what t-shirt to wear with my Dave Filoni hat. And I've narrowed it down to this one or the Wolfpack one. What are your thoughts, guys?
I say Wolfpack one, because I think that's even more obvious that it is Dave himself, because there's the whole Easter egg concept. Clearly, the Dave Filoni illustrated shirt that you have on today is very much a connection to Filoni, but I think the Wolfpack thing would get the message across more. Plus, if any of the troopers from the 501st that you're trooping with there that day are dressed as Wolf, that will make it look even cooler.
Yeah, that's a good point. Derek, do you agree?
So my question is do you have like the blazer jacket or his vest or something to wear?
Well, I the jacket that I have to wear is a Rex jacket.
Okay. Because what I would suggest is what he typically likes to do is he likes to wear whatever his shirt is, you know, that underneath it, you can see it, right? So... With the Ahsoka and the Wolf one, I like that one because it's almost kind of a la Princess Mononoke as well, that anime, you know, that I really enjoy. But you're not going to be able to see it as much, right? Because it's going to be covered by it. So I would go with the Wolf shirt that you wore last week, because then you'll have the blazer jacket. Then you can kind of, like I said, leave it, you know, half unzipped leave or mostly unzipped. Yeah. So.
All right. It is settled. I will wear the Wolfpack shirt.
Woohoo. Well, if you guys want a cool What a Piece of Junk shirt, or mouse pad, or iPad case, or pillow, or coffee mug, or any other merchandise from the cool other FPN shows, please check out our store at tpublic.com. Just go to tpublic.com and search up Fandom Podcast Network in the search bar, and you'll see all the cool merchandise there. And speaking of searching us up online, Derek, why don't you let the listeners know where they can find us out there on the internet?
So, the big place you can find us is obviously on the main master feed, which is the Podbean, fpnet.podbean.com. Obviously, there's the Podbean app. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. Facebook, look for the What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, which I run. The email, which is whatapieceofjunkpod scottandscott@gmail.com, and Scott will get that out. I don't know, Scott, the last time you cleaned out the email, if we actually forget anything.
we occasionally get a question or a comment from a listener, and when we do, that's germane to the topic. I'll share it on the show, but yeah, it's a lot of advertisements for spice sticks.
So, and then obviously, Kyle runs the Fandom Podcast Network Instagram page, so you can do that. But with any podcast, there's the ability to leave reviews. Nathan, why don't you tell the listeners this week why they should leave a review for us?
Well, unlike Sylar Saris, we want to be found. And leaving a review helps other people find us. We don't want to be hiding out in space, Florida. We want to be in your ears and in the ears of your Star Wars fan friends. So please leave us a review. It helps us to know what we're doing well, what we could be doing better, and also helps for our podcast to reach more people so that we don't have bounty hunters come try to track us down because we're so hard to find.
Don't make us spit acid in your face.
That's right. If I have to spit acid in one more person's face, I don't know what I'll do because I can't.
Because spitting acid is very difficult. good times. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. And please, as always, please remember to respect each other and respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan, budget.